in terms of the timing of when we did what would happen with that first professional show. We applied to do it in 2003,
yeah.
but the decision making was delayed so late that it wasn't possible for us to do it in that year.
That's right, yeah.
And so by the time then, so then it moved to 2004, and it was never going to be possible for me to work on a show with you in 2004. One, because I was meant to be opening this building, which in fact didn't happen that way, but that was still what was supposed to be happening. And then also, I got pregnant with, and Owen was born in
Finn.
At the end. No, Owen. Owen was born at the end of 2003, so I would have had a very tiny baby.
Yeah.
So that was then. It was agreed. We had this sort of idea for the project, and we met with Firenze. And I remember that conversation, the very first conversation with Firenze. You'd asked if she was interested, and she said she was, which was just brilliant. And I remember us having that conversation about this is the work that we would like to take forwards. And she wove that in her own style and language, and that became the first Immortal. But I think I must have then joined the board at that point.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, I can't do this, but maybe I can do that. So I became a board member. And I believe that Alison was the chair of the board at that point.
I'm not quite sure, but that would probably make sense. It was around 2003, 2004.
And at that time, so then around that time, what was going on for you in that first Immortal tour, and then going into the second one, was that you were managing a massive amount of growth, of development, to do that thing the first year was incredibly stressful, and it was very put loads of strain on your working relationship with Tom. You were just completely overstretched there, only the two of you. I can't remember if you had some other people around, but basically it was unbelievably stressful. And so you asked me to come, and or maybe I offered arriving to some scene of misery, offered to try to help,
break it down, try make to help communication to plans and...
That's right. So communication had broken down between you under all that pressure, and so it was very difficult to agree who was going to be responsible for what. You needed to divide up your roles in some way. So I remember that we had a series of conversations over that time that resulted in an idea that what was needed was somebody to take on the admin, the high-level admin, not an assistant, somebody who would deal with the general management of the company or the... To make the point was, not that you didn't want to do it or you couldn't do it, but that you wanted to be freer, both of you, to engage with the creative development, with the company management, with the development of the show, with the tour and new ideas, and that trying to share the administrative burden of the company at that now new scale, they broke you in two, and it was just too much. So it was agreed that the solution would be a person, and we agreed to call that role general manager, although we tried out all sorts of other names, I remember, and we wanted to... It was absolutely critical that that was the right person, that it was going to be a person who you and Tom could both get on with, who would understand the nature of the company and all its idiosyncrasies and quirks. It's not a normal organisation. The idea of appointing a normal arts manager to come and work with you was like, how's it going to be? So it was really scary.
So from... That 2004 was the first time that Tom and I actually went on to a salary. And it was also the time that we formed the charity. So a lot of things happened around that time.
I thought the charity was way before that.
No, we'd formed a company. Because I remember sitting in Clifton Street filling in the charity application forms. And that was, you know, we didn't have that office until 2003. So we became a charity in 2004. Before that, we were a company limited by guarantee, but a non-profit making with a non-profit making status. So
the company was incorporated as a charity in 2004.
Yeah.
So I think that Alison oversaw that process.
Maybe as chair.
As chair. And that was now we're talking about it, the massive journey of transition, if you want. We were as the development group, we were the architects of this new thing. But being the new thing, I know it wasn't completely new, but being this, producing on that scale and trying to drag a load of people around the place. was, of course, a huge challenge, and then also to be changing your internal structures and your management processes was, no wonder you were miserable.
Anyway, let's jump forward, because obviously you kind of, in terms of the creative role that you were playing, it kind of ceased around the 2004.
Well, it stopped then, didn't it? Yeah. So then I kept, but I remember that I would, I think that somewhere...
The support didn't stop, but the creative, you know...
I wasn't responsible for any creative work because I was doing that somewhere else.
Yeah. So then, but we continued to talk. We continued to have conversations about aspirations and what we wanted to do. And when the opportunity for me to come and do, to try out the big outdoor show at Swindon, again, our interests were sort of bubbling and crossing and going. And I remember you coming to see the show and afterwards saying, well, some of it worked, some of it didn't. I've got some ideas on how we could move this forward. And let's meet up and have a conversation about it. So we had a chat about it, looking at me all vague. And around the same time, Frank Wilson phoned me up and said, he didn't know we'd done a big outdoor show at that point. And he said, we're looking for companies that are working, not in the outdoor arts, but in that sector. So considering us as tent show, is there anything, because they just got their Without Walls partnership together, and they were like, we want to try and persuade people to take really high quality work outdoors.
Yeah.
Are you interested? And I was like, well, as it happens, we've just done this. I can show you some footage of where we were at with it. And we had then had a chat about how could we develop that, go forward, and then stuck in the application for...
So you have a slightly different memory of that conversation than I do. I remember coming to see Inside Out Roundabout in Swindon, and I remember saying, taking that, you took the donut structure that was made for the inside of the tent and you put it outdoors and put goalposts on it for aerial. And I remember saying, that looks brilliant outside. That is a brilliant idea. And it creates a whole other set of challenges about how you present circus on that scale. Because it was 36 metres diameter, wasn't it? So my relationship on one side of that as an audience person to something that was on the other side was very difficult. I couldn't...
And at that point, we still had it at the height that it was in the Immortal tent, which was 2 metres, so...
But we didn't know that was what the problem was at that point. I remember thinking, that is really problematic, I don't know how you do this. And then I remember us sitting around this table, we weren't sitting in these chairs, we were sitting here, and saying, well, I just don't know about this outdoor thing. Because the proposition was, can you do circus on quite a large scale? Would that be of interest? And just saying, I think outdoor circus is really problematic.
Yeah, and we started that conversation about what we didn't like about it.
And it was just basically, we've convinced ourselves that outdoor circus was really very difficult and probably wouldn't work. The way I remember it is, well, that seemed like you'd come an awful long way for us to decide that it was a bad idea. So we started looking at, well, let's not be so negative. Let's look at how could we do it if we were going to make a show that presented high-skill circus for an audience of 1,000 or more people. How would we ever figure out what that was going to be or how to do it? And it needed to be the kind of circus that we wanted to make, not all the things we could imagine. I remember we talked about the kind of large-scale circus-ish work that was being presented around that time, which tended to involve very large, amazing structures, well-engineered structures, and the performers were tiny little fringes dangling off it. And we didn't want to make that type of work, because for us what was exciting and remains that is the relationship between the performers and the audience. Yeah. So then we started to talk about how would we do it, and we said, well, we'd have to try. We'd have to do a lab. We'd have to do what we did with the warehouse shows, which is just make some work and see what happens. So how would we do that? We've got the structure. We've got the goalposts. We'd have to put that up somewhere, and then we'd have to bring some performers together, and then we'd have to try stuff. And already it's outside because it won't fit inside anywhere. And we've got a load of performers. So then we said, well, why don't we do that in public? Why don't we make this a lab project and inquiry and do the whole thing in public and ask the public what they think about what we're doing? And that became the project that we put forward, laughing our heads off, if I remember, thinking they're never going to buy this. So you phoned Frank and you said, this is how I remember it, you phoned Frank and you said, Frank, we've got an idea, this is what we want to do. And he said, yeah, yeah, right, put a, you know, write it down and stick it in. So we did. And we were completely convinced, laughing like drains the whole time, that there was no way that anyone was going to say yes to this. We called it the Great Outdoor Circus Inquiry, and we wrote a couple of paragraphs about how we would set up in the park and we'd try stuff and we'd ask the dog all sorts of things, and we would collaborate with community groups, as we had done, to explore this new form, and we would do a show at the end of the week, brackets, at the end of each residency, and then we sent it off thinking, well, that's the end of that. Didn't we? That
was
the end of this.
We had to do it
quickly because he wanted it now, didn't he? By the end of today, you've got to have a proposal. So we wrote it. And then we sent some costs in, didn't we? Little did we know what the real cost of that was going to be. But we said some amount of money. I remember 40,000, but I don't know if that's really what it was.
Well, I think that's what he said.
Oh, it has to be this.
You won't get more than this, so, you know.
And then that was the... And then how did you find out that we were going to do it? I can't remember that.
Well, there was some process that I was involved in with Without Walls, to-ing and fro-ing about, you know, were we serious? Could we make this? How would we take it from, you know, different places? Was it possible if each partner put in, the festivals that we, as a condition of Without Walls, you had to play in three of their festivals. So not only did we need to persuade Frank, we needed to persuade three other people. So I remember having...
Two other people.
So I remember having conversations with Norwich, Jonathan.
And Brighton.
What's his name? That's Philip. And they were both, yeah, okay, we'll buy into this. And we're like, blimey. Seriously. So we had the commissioning money, which was about 40,000, and we took the donut and we got a cast together.
Wait, I remember you phoning me. So I remember you phoning me, or you must have phoned me and saying, well, they say they want to do it. And me saying,
oh my God.
They want to do what? What is it they think that they've bought? Ali. And you say, well, they want to do what we said. So then we had to invent a universe, didn't we? It was a bit like inventing the company all those years ago, the new version of that, because we had to figure out what are we going to do? It was just some crazy concept. And then we really had to do it. So we had a development week in Llanelli.
Yeah.
It's a week, we called it, because the conditions were really shit. So you and Duncan told everybody, it's a week, it's just a week, don't complain. And we tried out stuff, and we arrived at the some beginning scenes or some sort of beginning structures and concepts of what this show might be.
With just the professionals. About 20 people, wasn't it?
Well, it was professionals. We had a certain number of people who were
our own
experienced
trainees.
Professionals and trainees, and some other people who we'd recruited for the project. I remember some people we hadn't met before who were...
That's right, I just put down, want a volunteer with No Fit State on a wild adventure, and sent it out through the networks and got a bunch of...
We had about 20 people, I think, for that week. And that was an amazing week. We were just inventing from nothing. What are we going to do on this structure? What can we do all together? What can we... But I remember that out of that came a kind of a storyboard or a beginning of an idea of what would we do when we arrived in Stockton.
And we invited Organised Chaos to come down one night and play on it, because we thought, well, we'd better try something with a community group before we end up in...
Yeah. So they came and they did a bit of free...